mission and my passion to assign every decimal numbered shelf to every decimal numbered spine. I'm
Good morning. Welcome to the Library Show. My name is Brooke Schaefer, and I'm a librarian, and I'm also your host this morning. Delighted to be here on Valentine's Day. And because it's Valentine's Day, I asked a very special person, my Valentine, to come in and be in the studio with me this morning. Paul Norwood, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thanks.
Because of the Valentine's Day, we decided to choose an appropriate theme for the day. We're going to be talking about love stories today, books that we've read over our lifetime that the love stories have stuck with us in honor of Valentine's Day today. So I immediately went to thinking about books that have stuck with me, and I wanted to go as far back as I could thinking about love stories that I've read that left an impression with me. And the furthest back I could go was to the book A Town Like Alice by the author Neville Shute. And I must have read it, I'm guessing, in junior high. I can't even remember how old I would have been. But it's a war story, actually, kind of about a death march that a woman and a man end up taking in Malay. Excuse me. This is during when the Japanese come in and take over. And they capture a group of women and children, and there's a man that happens to be there as well, and they march them across the country, and a harrowing march that they go on, and it ends up being very much about this journey that they take. The characters are Jean Paget, or Paget, I'm not sure how her name is said, and then the man is a sergeant, Joe Harmon, and Jean is from London and happens to be over traveling around wartime, and Joe is from Australia, and I'm not sure what he was doing over there. I think he was a sergeant, actually, so he might have been involved in the military conflict. So these two meet while on this death march, and they both survive it. And the part that sticks with me from all these years ago was actually their love story, not so much this harrowing death march that they went on. And they end up reconnecting in Australia, and in a town near the town called Alice in Australia. And that's where the name of the book comes from. But that's the first love story I remember reading and being drawn into the romance of the story. I'm curious, Paul, if you have any first love stories that you remember reading from your childhood.
I didn't read a lot of love stories. And in fact, the first one that I read was, incidentally, I was reading The Little House on the Prairie. Some of you may be familiar with it. And as the volumes progress, she grows up, and she eventually falls in love with this guy, I think, called Almanzo Wild. And I didn't like that part at all, because I was too young, I think. I was not ready for this kind of stuff.
So your first love story was one you would have rather not have read. You wished that there was no more love in it.
That's right. She should have remained at whatever age I was at the time and not grown up.
Do you know how old you were when you were reading these books?
I don't. I have a very poor memory of those things.
But you do remember the Little House on the Prairie series
sure.
pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll listen to a love song really quickly and then regroup to talk about some love stories that you do like, Paul. So we're going to listen to a love song by Feist, and it's called Secret Heart.
Something to do with you just can't go through it alone. Let a man on your secret heart. This very secret that you try to conceal is the very same one that you die to reveal. Go tell him how you feel. This very secret.
Welcome back to the Library Show, and thank you for tuning in. Thanks for calling us and letting us know you're listening. Appreciate hearing from you. Right before we went to our little song, we were chatting about some love stories that we'd read, and I mentioned the love story, Town Like Alice, and then Paul mentioned Little House on the Prairie, which was a disappointing love story. He wasn't ready to hear the love story, but I'm curious, Paul, if there, what's the first love story you read that you recall that you actually were excited about the love story, or... Yeah.
I think it was The Sound of Waves by Yukio Mishima. And
that is an author I'm not familiar with. So it sounds like, is that a Japanese author?
He is a Japanese author. Okay. And so some people call Japanese authors by their last name, first name. So he would be Mishima Yukio, but I use the European way. So Yukio Mishima was a mostly post-war Japanese modern writer. And... he did not write a lot of love stories, but he wrote a couple. And one of them was a three-volume love story. Another one was a one-volume short thing. And so the one-volume short thing is called The Sound of Waves. And it's quite a nice little classically pleasant one. And I didn't bring the book itself because it got called from the library as part of the move, which is probably good. I don't think it got hardly ever checked out.
Can you tell us maybe then just what, I know you don't have the book itself to read from,
that's right.
But what is the story
So
about?
I have a book here about the work of Mishima. It's written by Marguerite Yourcenar, who is herself a very good modern writer from France. And it's probably a rare book, so I don't think it can be easily obtained. It's called Mishima, A Vision of the Void.
Okay, and then the love story that Mishima wrote, that's spoke to you. What was that story about? The love story that you recalled, the one that he
okay,
read.
Okay. So this says what it's about.
Oh, okay. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Sorry. I'll go ahead and read it real quick. So this is what Marguerite Yourcenar says about The Sound of Waves. The Sound of Waves is a sunny masterpiece, typical of those happy books a writer often writes on only once in his life. It is also one of those books whose immediate success soon ruins them in the eyes of hard-to-please readers. Its perfect clarity is deceptive, like the Greek statuary of the Golden Age, which avoids on the surfaces of the human body the more pronounced hollows and curves that would spoil the subtle effect of light and shade, to better allow hands and eyes to perceive the infinite delicacy of the modeled form. The Sound of Waves is a book beyond any academic criticism. This idyllic story of a young boy and girl on a Japanese island, with no other occupation for the man than deep-sea fishing, and for the woman during a short season of the year than diving for mother-of-pearl abalone, depicts a certain way of life, not destitute, but limited to strict essentials, and a love hindered only by the narrow class difference between the son of a poor widow, an abalone fisherwoman, and the daughter of a small-time shipowner who seems to the other villages a very rich man. The author had recently returned from Greece at the time he began this short novel, and his enthusiasm for this newly discovered Greece insinuated itself into his description of a tiny Japanese island. To risk a comparison that might seem excessive, War and Peace has all the characteristics of a Slavic epic, yet we know that in writing it, Tolstoy drew his inspiration from Homer. By its subject alone, that of young love, The Sound of Waves seems at first glance one of those many versions of Daphnis and Chloe. But here we should add that, leaving aside all superstitious venerations of antiquity and of decadent antiquity at that, of the two, the melodic line of the sound, the melodic line of the Sound of Waves is infinitely pure. And it goes on and on. What's interesting is that this writer, Mishima, who's known for dark stories involving people who commit crimes and destroy things, and he was also kind of a far-right nationalist, emperor worship type guy, wrote this just kind of sweet love story with nothing in it but just... yeah, just a love story, almost like a tale, something that maybe Tanizaki would have done. And another writer that would have done that would have been Kawabata. And Kawabata was kind of his big rival in Japanese literature. He ended up getting the Nobel Prize for Literature, and Mishima was for his whole life embittered about it, that he didn't get the Nobel Prize for Literature. And many people thought he deserved it, but his politics were a little bit too far to the right for the taste of the Nobel Committee, probably. And Kawabata ended up getting it. And I brought the book from the library collection. It's called Snow Country. And I think that's the very book that got the Nobel Prize. That kind of triggered the Nobel Prize. And do I have time to read a piece of it?
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the basic setting is this person who goes out to snow country, kind of northwest Japan. And it later became famous because the Olympics were hosted there once, the Winter Olympics. And it's an area that's rural and kind of backwater and gets snowed in for the whole winter. And this guy comes from the city and he's married, I believe, but ends up falling in love with a prostitute, which is a recurring theme in Kawabata's literature. And the man's name is Shimamura, and the woman's name in this case is Komako. He looked down at his feet and saw that they had come to the crossing. The Milky Way. Beautiful, isn't it? Komako murmured. She looked up at the sky as she ran off ahead of him. The Milky Way. Shimamura looked up too, and he felt himself floating into the Milky Way. Its radiance was so near that it seemed to take him up into it. Was this the bright vastness the poet Basho saw when he whirled of the Milky Way arched over a stormy sea? The Milky Way came down just over there to wrap the night earth in its naked embrace. There was a terrible voluptuousness about it. Shimamura fancied that his own small shadow was being cast up against it from the earth. Each individual star stood apart from the rest, and even the particles of silver dust in the luminous clouds could be picked up, so clear was the night. The limitless depth of the Milky Way pulled his gaze up into it. Wait, wait, Shimamura called. Come on! Komako ran toward the dark mountain on which the Milky Way was falling. She seemed to have her long skirts in her hands, and as her arms waved, the skirts rose and fell a little. He could feel the red over the started snow. He ran after her as fast as he could. She slowed down and took his hand, and his long skirts fell to the ground. You're going too? And it's just a nice passage.
Those are two love stories that you shared with us. The first one was called Waves.
Yes, The Sound of Waves Yukio Mishima, or Mishima Yukio.
Okay.
And then the other one is Snow Country by Yasunari Kawabata.
And those were two writers that were writing, they're contemporaries of each other. They were writing around the same time, and they're both from Japan.
That's right. And there's an interesting parallel between them and Gabriel Garcia Marquez and Mario Vargas Llosa in South America. But I don't know if we'll get around to it. We did bring some more music. There's a great tune by Barefoot Bluegrass,
which we will listen to. I think we might have to have it go out on it.
Oh, that's a good idea.
We're running low on time already.
Do you want to bring up the next book?
Sure. Okay.
Either way is fine.
Yeah. No, I will. I have a couple more books, but I'll maybe jump around a little bit. One that I really want to talk about is Brokeback Mountain by the author Annie Proulx. And some of you may have heard of this love story because eventually it was turned into a film. Maybe some of you have seen the movie. But before that, the film is based on this very short novella. I mean, I almost want to call it a short story. It's a slim novel, comes in a slim book, just maybe 50 pages long, and it's very short. And you can read it in a quick sitting, too. And it does a wonderful job. Annie Proulx has a knack for, I mean, she's an amazing writer, and she does a good job of capturing people and moments and also scenery. But this is a love story between two men in Wyoming, and they're kind of cowboys. And it was in a time period when this sort of love would have been looked down upon. It would have been unsafe to be, for them to be open that they were in love with each other. So they both tried to kind of pursue traditional loves. I think both of them went on to get married to women, and they were to live separate lives. They couldn't live together. They couldn't be public about their love. But they carried on a love affair over many years. It started one summer when they were both young men trying to save up money. And, I think they were sheep herding for some money one summer in this place called Brokeback Mountain. And that's where they fell in love. And I do have a couple of passages to pull out to read from. But I want to see if I can get to choose the right one. So there's a moment. Yeah, I'll just read this passage to you. I think it captures the love that they shared. The two characters are called Jack and Ennis. They'll both be mentioned in here. What Jack remembered and craved in a way he could neither help nor understand was the time that distant summer on Brokeback, when Ennis had come up behind him and pulled him close, the silent embrace satisfying some shared and sexless hunger. They had stood that way for a long time in front of the fire, its burning, tossing, ruddy chunks of light, the shadow of their bodies a single column against the rock. The minutes ticked by from the round watch in Ennis's pocket, from the sticks in the fire settling into coals. Stars bit through the wavy heat layers above the fire. Ennis's breath came slow and quiet. He hummed, rocked a little in the spark light, and Jack leaned against the steady heartbeat, the vibrations of the humming like faint electricity, and standing, he fell into sleep that was not sleep but something else drowsy and tranced, until Ennis, dredging up a rusty but still usable phrase from the childhood time before his mother died, said, "Time to hit the hay, cowboy. I gotta go. Come on, you're sleeping on your feet like a horse," and gave Jack a shake, a push, and went off in the darkness. Jack heard his spurs tremble as he mounted, the words, "See you tomorrow," and the horse's shuddering snort, grind of hoof on stone. Later, that dozy embrace solidified in his memory as the single moment of artless, charmed happiness in their separate and difficult lives. Nothing marred it, even the knowledge that Ennis would not then embrace him face to face, because he did not want to see nor feel that it was Jack he held. And maybe, he thought, they'd never got much farther than that. Let be, let be. It's, I think that passage captures it. It's how it's a tragic love story. It's two people who very much love each other and can't ultimately be together, and it ends tragically. But it's a beautiful love story, and Prue does a wonderful job of capturing this love between these two men and the difficulty of the love and the time period that they fell in love. So it's definitely a love story that I recommend, although it's a tearjerker. And then Paul is grabbing another book right there, which I'm delighted to see you grabbing. Yes, because we are running out of time here on the Library Show, where we're talking about love stories. And as we were getting ready for this show, I pulled out my all-time favorite love poem. And this is my favorite love poem just from in my recent history, just from the last 6 years, because it's a poem that Paul shared with me. So I don't know if you want to read that poem, Paul?
Okay. So this one is by Mary Oliver, and it's in volume 2 of her new and selected poems. And I don't know which collection it comes from. White Pine. It's called March. There isn't anything in this world but mad love. Not in this world. No tame love, calm love, mild love, no so-so love, and of course, no reasonable love. Also, there are 100 paths through the world that are easier than loving. But who wants easier? We dream of love. We moon about, thinking of Romeo and Juliet, or Tristan, or the lost queen rushing away over the Irish Sea, all doom and splendor. Today, on the beach, an old man was sitting in the sun. I called out to him, and he turned. His face was like an empty pot. I remember his tall, pale wife. She died long ago. I remember his daughter-in-law when she died. Hard and too young, he wept in the streets. He picked up pieces of wood and stones and anything else that was there and threw them at the sea. Oh, how he loved his wife. Oh, how he loved young Barbara. I stood in front of him, not expecting any answer, yet not wanting to pass without some greeting, but his face had gone back to whatever he was dreaming. Something touched me, lightly, like a knife blade. I felt I was bleeding, though just a little, a hint. Inside I flared hot, then cold. I thought of you, whom I love madly.
Thank you for reading that, and thank you for coming on the library show today, Paul Norwood. We spoke about A Town Like Alice by Neville Shute, and I brought up Brokeback Mountain by Annie Proulx. And then what were the names of the stories you told us about, Paul?
Snow Country by Yasunori Kawabata, and The Sound of Waves by Yukio Mishima.
Great, and we're going to go out with a love song today, and this is a song Paul chose, a wonderful song called Love Chooses You, and it's by Barefoot Bluegrass. Thanks for tuning in to the library show. Tune in next week at 10:30 to hear some more conversation about books.
Love comes unbidden. Right down to your shoes.